Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Have you gotten robocalls or mail saying that you're pre-approved for loans or credit cards? Well, if you have, thieves, both foreign and domestic, may have you in their sights. And it's the equity in the home that they... And it's the equity in your home that they want. It's called home title fraud, and it's one of the fastest growing crimes. Thieves are after your money, and they get it by forging your home's title. So it looks like you sold your home. Then they'll take out loans against your home and stick you with the payments. Ugh. No insurance, bank, or identity theft program protects you, but Home Title Lock does. For pennies a day, Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's online title and mortgage to keep thieves away. Again, if you've received robocalls or mail for pre-approved credit cards or loans, you need to move fast. You can receive 60 free days of risk-free Home Title Lock protection now by going to HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address to verify you're not already a victim. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Omar blamed the United States for the crisis in Venezuela. I mean, think of that one. And at a press conference just this week, when asked whether she supported Al-Qaeda, that's our enemy, she refused to answer. She didn't want to give an answer to that question. And she looks down with contempt on the hardworking Americans, saying that ignorance is pervasive in many parts of this country. And obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds.
People like my father and people like Madeleine Albright, who came here and made this country greater, they will tell you that this is pure and simple evil, and that someone's going to get hurt, whether it be someone in an office today or in a school or anywhere in America. Someone is going to get hurt, whether they are hurt personally, emotionally, psychologically, or physically. Let me just tell you, we're not in a dangerous place. We're at a place where things are boiling over, and this president is promulgating racism and violence. There's no two ways about it, and there are people who know a lot more about this than me who will say we are in not just a dangerous place, we've gone over the line.
Well, the quote mainstream Trump resistance media, they seized on that moment from the Trump rally as they seized on lock her up, the chant that we heard oftentimes during the 2016 race at Trump rallies. They seized on that to then continue the narrative. If you vote for Trump, you're voting for an awful, evil, racist person. And doesn't matter how well the economy is doing. Doesn't matter if we've finally taken on China. None of that matters. All the progress doesn't matter. It matters that some people in a section of the rally said, send her back. And again, this is all they have. This is what they'll do. Now, I don't particularly like the send her back. I mean, I think it's kind of lame. It's not my thing. I wouldn't say that. But it's the old love it or leave it. It's the old love it or leave it mentality that, frankly, a lot of us heard growing up. And it wasn't directed toward a race. It was directed toward people who came into the country from anywhere and then could hardly find anything good to say about the country. And certainly don't respect the office of the presidency. Doesn't mean you can't criticize the president. But to call him the current occupant of the White House, all of that nonsense. So it's a debate about what kind of country we're going to be. Does patriotism matter anymore? Does a flag or our anthem matter? Our historical markers? Does any of that matter? And the left increasingly says not only does it matter, it has to be destroyed. Joining us now is Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House and the host of the great new podcast, Newt's World. He joins us now. Newt, this is so predictable that the media spent all of last night and much of this morning seizing on the send her back chant as yet another way to condemn both the president and his supporters.
Sure. Look, I mean, as Hillary Clinton taught us, these, you know, Trump supporters are deplorables. And this just gave the news media a new way to feel good about themselves and remind themselves that these deplorables do deplorable things. Now, the fascinating thing is, and I'm doing my newsletter tomorrow on patriotism versus racism, because on the left, remember, you know, just a few days ago, it was Nancy Pelosi who was a racist because she dared to challenge AOC and the radicals in the Democratic Party.
Are you speaking to Nancy Pelosi?
Our teams are in communication. Our chiefs are meeting.
But shouldn't it be a face-to-face? I want to know if you are.
She's speaking. The new member, not the speaker.
No,
she has every right to sit down with her in any moment, any time, with any of us.
Yeah.
She is Speaker of the House. She can ask for a meeting to sit down with us for clarification. The fact of the knowledge is, and I've done racial justice work in our country for a long time, acknowledge the fact that we are women of color. So when you do single us out, be aware of that and what you're doing, especially because some of us are getting death threats.
Whoever is going to challenge the left is going to end up being homophobic, racist, misogynist, etc. Just make up the list. But patriotism, the idea that you ought to love America, the idea that you ought to respect the flag. You know, this whole event that happened last week, which the news media didn't want to cover, in Colorado, where 1,000 people attacked a federal building, tore down the American flag, defaced it, hung it back up upside down, and put a Mexican flag next to it. Well, as an American, I frankly condemn that and oppose that, and I think it's totally wrong. And yet, when he was asked about it, the Democratic governor of Colorado couldn't bring himself to say it was wrong. Because on the left, being against America is a moral virtue. It's a good thing. And I think this campaign, in the end, will be about patriotism and whether you love America or you despise America, whether you want to change America into a totally different country, or whether you think that the Founding Fathers gave us an amazing prescription for freedom and for self-government.
Yeah, I think it's that, and I also think, are you ready to give up all of your gains and your 401ks and all of your opportunities and when your wage increases? Are you willing to give that all up, just you and your family, because someone else calls Trump a racist and that he's a bad person? I think people are going to have to make this very personal for themselves and their own families, because if they're ready to do that, if they're ready just to turn the clock back on all this economic prosperity, then I guess we are living in a different country. But I don't think that's where most people are. I think they love the flag. I think they love the country, and they love what has happened to our economy under Trump. And I think they're really smoking something if they think the same argument they made last time is going to work this time. I just don't see it, Newt.
Well, I think 2018 didn't teach us any lessons about the 2020 campaign. I think it was a remarkably dumb campaign by Republicans and a clever campaign by Democrats.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really tell you what it's going to be like when the whole country pays attention. And I think essentially you're right. I think that when you ask people, do you really think we ought to have open borders and give tax-paid free health care to illegal immigrants, the Democratic base collapses pretty rapidly. If you ask people, do you really think that government should take away your right to buy health insurance, support for the Democratic ideas collapses pretty rapidly. If you ask people, do you really think babies should be aborted in the ninth month and maybe even killed after they're born, which New York State, for example, adopted, support for the Democrats tends to collapse. So I think when we get down to real-life choices about real values and a real direction for the country, that the choice is going to be so wide. I mean, the perfect moment was the other night in the debate when every single Democratic candidate raised their hand. I mean, they're all the same person in terms of policy.
Well, they've all decided that it's easier to go left and embrace kind of the Gang of Four's views on pretty much everything than it is to argue that Trump's economy isn't really working for everyone. So it's easier just to, again, play the default. You know, the default position is Trump's a racist, and we have to remove him from office. And they use the word now dignity a lot. I'm seeing this, Newt, in a lot of Twitter accounts for immigration activists. The word dignity is used. And I think Trump can turn that word right around on them, given what they've said about the unborn and the American people and our anthem
and how they behave. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are not people who have a big focus on dignity. These are people who are passionate, almost out of control emotionally. Say things that, you know, when Congresswoman Presley says, we don't want brown faces who don't have a brown voice. We don't want black faces who don't have a black voice. We don't want gay faces that don't have a gay voice. And we don't want Muslim faces that don't have a Muslim voice. I mean, how do you get much more racist than that?
Well, McConnell spoke out this morning on Fox Business.
Well, look, he's right about the squad wanting to turn us into a socialist country. What he should have added, however, is it's a lot broader than just the four of them. You know, the Speaker, the Democratic leader of the Senate, and a whole lot of others, including the presidential candidates, have all signed up for things like the Green New Deal, which would take away your job, Medicare for All, which would take away your private health insurance. So I think the president's onto something. We're having a big debate now and next year about what we want America to be like.
Oh, I think the presidential candidates are afraid of them. I think Nancy Pelosi's now afraid of them. You know, she tried to distance herself from them, and the minute they got in a fight with President Trump, she had to rally to their defense.
Do you think the president does this as a matter of strategy, or do you think he's kind of shooting from the hip? And that's how it all works out.
I told a reporter the other morning, you'll appreciate this, I said, this is like watching Lucy with the football and Charlie Brown. I said, there have been at least 15 times now since he became a candidate when he'll do something in such a way that it totally outrages the media. They froth at the mouth for 4 days, and when the dust clears, he won. And they just don't seem to be able to get it. He's a very smart man who he understood Nancy Pelosi was trying to create a little gap between the four radicals and the rest of the conference. And he just did something which required them all to unify. And you're presently going to see an AOC voting percentage for every single Democrat House member. And all of a sudden, these moderates are going to turn out to be voting 90-95% with the radicals.
Well, and even David Axelrod had to admit that today. He said, you know, he wants to elevate these four women.
He is repeating the pattern of his brief political career. He wants to elevate these four young members of Congress to make them the emblem of the Democratic Party. I just have to take a step back as a strategist and say I recognize what he's doing. And a lot of what he does is intuitive.
Totally.
It's not mapped out, but it's worked for him. And he thinks this will work for him.
I think the president is doing it, not just for strategy, though, because I think And this is from my conversations with him, and I'm not giving away anything, but I think he wants everyone to love the country as much as he does. And I think he's stunned when people don't. I mean, I think it's a visceral thing. It's like with my parents. If my parents were still alive and saw what people today, with all of our prosperity, were saying about our founders and ripping down statues and so forth, I don't know what they would do or say. They would be so disheartened. And so disgusted. And in a way, I'm glad they're not here to see it because of everything they went through. But they would be just disgusted with this.
Well, we are in basically a cultural civil war. I mean, you have people who deeply dislike America, who condemn America, who lie about America, who would change America radically into a very different country. They, frankly, I don't think you can debate with them because they're implacable. They're, you know, these are people who don't want to have a debate. All they want to do is yell at you and smear you and tell you to shut up.
Yeah, and this is what we've come to expect from the left: the demonization of those who disagree, and they're all racist and they're all horrible. By the way, I don't know if you saw this, Newt, but Ilhan Omar introduced a resolution defending the boycott of Israel and likened it to the boycotts of Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union.
I mean, I think we have to be honest about the level of anti-Semitism now in the Democratic Party and the level of hatred for Israel in the Democratic Party. And by the way, the Democratic Party now tolerates them. I mean, the Democratic Party has moved steadily away from being a party that supports Israel's right to exist.
No, and that talk about a change. I mean, where's Chuck Schumer? I keep saying, like, where's Chuck Schumer on this?
Well, Schumer just came out in favor of the Reparations Commission.
Oh my God.
Which tells you how much pressure he's under, because he knows that that is an utterly stupid idea that's impossible to execute. But he's having to pander to his left. And look at the candidates from the Senate who are running for president. They're all on the left.
No, it is. This is beyond terrifying. Newt, before we let you go, on Antifa with the continued violence, obviously what you saw happening at the ICE Center, raising of the Mexican flag over, and ripping down the American flag, people being viciously and violently attacked. I mean, that's real violence. And this morning they were saying, lock me up. Mika Brzezinski was saying, excuse me, Mika Brzezinski saying send them home is going to spur violence. We actually have real violence happening. You can't get these people to talk about it.
Well, I mean, I think Antifa probably will eventually have to be outlawed and have to be dealt with as an organized group intending to overthrow the United States. That's what they say. And they do use violence, and we have every right to protect ourselves.
Newt Gingrich, we just love having you on. Thank you for joining us. Newt's newsletter is out when, Newt? Is it out later today or tomorrow?
It'll be out tomorrow morning on foxnews.com, and you can also get it by going to Gingrich 360, and it's free.
Okay, Gingrich360.com. We'll link it up on our Facebook page, which has a massive following, so we'll do that as well. And Trump's going to continue to update his schedule over the weekend. I think he has another rally planned now next week, but we'll bring that to Newt Gingrich here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Thanks, Newt. Let's go to Julie in Virginia. Julie's watching all of this unfold with AOC plus three. Julie.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
I wanted to talk a bit about what you just said with Newt, too, about the Antifa thing. I mean, all four of these women, the so-called squad, have yet to condemn anything that has happened. And they are saying that people are calling them racist for their sentiments that they hold. But, of course, it's not racist for Americans to call their anti-American sentiment. The fact that they are elected and they are all four not white, all different races, is just proof that it's not racist, and it's their opinions that are being called out, not their skin color. So these people always talk about wanting to have equal rights, be treated equally, but as soon as they're called out for an opinion that they hold, it's racism. It's not equal rights.
Right. They want special treatment. No, it's an amazing thing. They can level the most vicious accusations against people, but when someone like Trump says, I'm calling you on your you-know-what, that's racist. We're all people of color. So are you saying that people of color who are in elected office can't be criticized, or they have to be criticized a certain way? She's on the verge of calling Nancy Pelosi a racist, or warning her, watch out, Nancy. You take that step over the line and we're going to brand you a racist, too. It's clear that. And look, Ayaan Pressley made that clear the other day when she said what Newt just referenced.
If you are not prepared to come to that table and to represent that voice, don't come. Because we don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need black faces that don't want to be a black voice. We don't need Muslims that don't want to be a Muslim voice. We don't need queers that don't want to be a queer voice. Come on, speak it.
So what is that telling people? Julie, you're making a profound point. They want the protective cone around them at all times. John Heilman, who seems like, I don't know, he's one of those guys that, he's happiest when America and the middle class is kind of grousing, I think. And he's unhappiest when America is doing really well economically. But I guess that's not unlike many other people in the Democrat intelligentsia.
The president's inciting violence against an individual American. Donald Trump's done some pretty horrific things in the course of his time in the Oval Office, but this is not just the low point, but the worst, the most depraved, disgusting, and totally odious thing that the president's ever done. And I think, you know,
that's saying a lot.
We're already in a really bad place. We're headed someplace worse.
We're heading someplace worse, where we've completely brought China to heel, where Americans are actually more positive about the economy than they've been in decades. But something terrible is happening here. So what does he think? People are going to go to Ilhan Omar's house and physically deport it? You know what I was also thinking? I wouldn't be surprised if some Democrats were in that crowd and started chanting that. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Let's go to Bill, also in Virginia. Bill, welcome.
Hey, Laura. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Once again, it seems as though the tolerant left is trying to label those who don't agree with them in order to distract from their real agenda of socialism.
This
country was built on the backs of hardworking immigrants, and unfortunately, this group seems to only want to tear down the American dream.
Yeah. No, I think they want to make it sound very noble, though, don't they? It's a very noble thing to say, we're for the marginalized communities. Trump's already helped the marginalized communities and continues to help them every single day. We're for the marginalized communities. AOC just tweeted out, reminder, what some people are calling a radical extreme left agenda, Medicare for all, a living wage, and labor rights. You know, K through 16 schooling, a.k.a. public colleges. I don't even know what that means. K through 16 schooling? What's that?
12, isn't it?
Oh, K through 16 college. In other words, college. That's right. So plus four, college. 100% renewable energy. What does that mean? No more fracking, no more all the economic growth from oil and gas. Forget it. That's all gone. Your cars, all gone. Aviation, all gone. Fixing the pipes in Flint. So that's the federal government's job. Not hurting immigrants. Again, conflating legal and illegal. And nobody's hurting immigrants. Nobody wants to hurt immigrants. People are deciding to break our laws, come across our border illegally, make phony claims of asylum, and then complain about the conditions. So that's what's happening. Obama had 8 years. I think they need to be pressed, the AOC plus three crowd. They need to be asked, was Obama liberal enough for you? Was he a sellout? He had 8 years. Why didn't he do any of this? He had the first 2 years with a Democrat House and Senate. So how do you consider Obama's presidency? Rate it today. Oh, yeah. They're not going to ask these questions. They're not going to ask these questions at all. Everyone loves summer, except when it comes to sleeping, because there's nothing worse than ruining a great night's sleep in these heat-trapping sheets with no way to get cool. Well, you want to stay dry. You want to get your rest. That's why I use Sheiks. Sheiks patented sleep tech fabrics breathe 10 times better than traditional cotton sheets to keep you cool. They draw moisture away from the body to keep you dry, ensuring a deeper, more restorative night's sleep. Nothing compares to the comfort of Sheiks. The softness, unbelievable. And you're going to wake up feeling recharged and ready for a great day. So don't worry if you have a large bed. Sheiks come with deep pockets, so they'll fit any mattress perfectly. So what are you waiting for? Visit trysheiks.com/Laura. And use the promo code Laura, you'll get 25% off your purchase. Plus, you'll receive free shipping, a bonus pair of pillowcases, and a 30-night risk-free guarantee. That's trysheiks.com/Laura, code Laura. trysheiks.com/Laura, code Laura. Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. Pluto TV is free on all of your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
When I was in college, I took a terrorism class. Every time the professor said Al-Qaeda, he sort of like his shoulders went up and, you know.
Yeah, he's in command here. Like, yeah.
Al-Qaeda, you know, hospital. You don't say America with an intensity. You don't say England with an intensity. Yeah. You know, you don't say the army with an intensity.
So you don't regret your words either?
I do not, but I have gotten I am grateful for the opportunity to really learn how my words made people feel.
Would you like to make it clear that you were not anti-Semitic?
Oh, certainly not, yes.
Would you like to make that clear?
Yes, I mean, nothing I said, at least to me, was meant for that purpose.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast. We are examining every aspect of this current debate about what it means to be an American. And a lot of people have American citizenship that don't appreciate it. I mean, I think we've all gone through periods in our lives where we probably didn't stop to think that, gosh, we live in the greatest country in the face of the earth. We've had a complicated history, but my goodness, look at all we've achieved. And yet I think we've arrived at this point in time where norms, just regular norms, like standing for the Pledge of Allegiance or the Pledge of Allegiance or the rule of law or a court order means something, whether it's from an immigration judge, a federal judge, a state judge, or court orders are to be enforced. Legal versus illegal immigration, all these just basic concepts. They're all now up for debate because we have four disgruntled folks who are freshman congresspeople or congresswomen or whatever they want to be called. And they want their profile and their name ID raised across the country. I mean, I know Colin Kaepernick, he did it and all that. But here's the question. Do you want this engine of peace and prosperity to continue, or do you want to give it all back and put it in the laps of AOC plus three? Because they have this party by the you know what, and they are threatening the Democrats implicitly, and I bet behind closed doors explicitly. And you just better know what you're getting. You're not getting Kamala Harris or even Joe Biden if they win the nomination and win the presidency. You're getting AOC plus three in the White House. That's who's going to be really calling the shots, not Joe Biden. You think if AOC plus three said, we're going to organize 100,000 people to protest the White House in front of the Supreme Court, unless you give us veto power over your nominee, judicial nominee, you don't think they're going to cave to her? They're going to make all sorts of concessions to these folks. That's just where it is. And their views on Israel and our democratic ally in the Middle East, that's out the window. So our alliance with Israel is now up for grabs. David Rubin is a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and author of the book Trump and the Jews. He joins us now to, I think, shine a light on what this rise in anti-Semitism. We saw it in Europe. We've seen it in places like Belgium and in England and Germany. But you're seeing it now in different pockets rise up in the United States as well. David, it's great to have you on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. How are you?
Well, thank you. Good to be with you.
David, why is this moment, this debate right now, so important?
Well, it's important because it's coming to it's bringing to the fore what the Democratic Party actually believes in. And it's not just this gang of four or squad of four or whatever you want to call them. They're the ones that are very vocal, and they spew out all this invective and this anti-Semitism, and they call everyone a racist, and they invent new diseases such as Islamophobia. But the problem here is that the rest of the Democratic Party is running scared. That's the real problem.
And now the resolution to introduce this pro-divestment movement in the House. Ilhan Omar introducing this. It's called pro-BDS, you know, boycott, divest from Israel. What is really going on with that?
Well, it's a movement to encourage the boycott of Israel. It's a movement to cast Israel as this evil country, which they come out and they say to Talib and Omar have come out very clearly and referred to Israel as hypnotizing the world to carry out evil. That is how they want to cast a very strong ally of the United States. And so that's the purpose of this. That's the purpose of trip to Israel that they want to make, and they want to have that public stage to change the whole narrative about Israel and the Middle East.
And their ultimate goal is what? So let's say they get all this and they manage to somehow get this resolution passed, which they won't because they don't have the votes for it. But what is their ultimate goal in the Middle East? Some people saying it's to bring the principles of Sharia law into the United States. But is this what these women really want?
These, both of these women believe in jihadist Islam. I can't be any clearer about it. That is what they believe in. They've made it clear through all of their statements. They made it clear that is what they believe in. So a lot of your listeners probably don't know that Sharia law says that that you cannot build a church, you cannot build any other place of worship in a Sharia law-based country. You cannot wear a cross or a Star of David visibly in a Sharia-based country. That is what they believe in. That is the ideology that they're trying to further, and they are exploiting the freedom of the United States to bring about an ideology that is foreign to the United States.
And the anti-Semitism is a you know, it's a plague. But how has it personally affected you and your family going back to 2001?
Oh, well, look, my 3-year-old son and I were wounded in a terrorist attack at the end of 2001. We were shot and wounded by Palestinian terrorists from the Palestinian Authority, to be precise. And I was shot in the leg. My son was shot in the head. The bullet that went into his head and through his neck missed his brainstem by 1 millimeter. And this was, we survived. We survived the attack. We got away from the terrorists. Not easily, but we got away from the terrorists. And we arrived in the hospital and had to undergo a lot of treatments and a lot of surgeries. And my son had to go through a lot of psychological post-trauma therapy. But we're only two of many thousands of Israeli civilians who have been killed or wounded through those terrorist attacks that these women support. These women are aligned with the Hamas terrorist organization. They're aligned with the Palestinian Authority, which pays terrorists for every terror attack that they commit. And I should point out that the three terrorists who shot and wounded my son and me, they've been in jail for a number of years, but their families still receive payments from the Palestinian Authority every single month, substantial payments. And to President Trump's credit, he halted foreign aid to the Palestinian Authority until they halt their payments to these terrorists, to all of the terrorists who are committing attacks and who the Palestinian Authority is paying. So that is certainly to Trump's credit. And in my book, Trump and the Jews, I laid out very clearly what the steps are that President Trump has taken to turn upside down the hostile Obama policy towards Israel, and to make it a more common sense pro-Israel and pro-American policy.
One of the things that I've heard in the last couple of days among the most absurd is when commentators and even a few politicians were saying that Trump's rhetoric, send them back sentiment, is going to turn on the Jews, that it could turn on the Jews. Now, who's been a more pro to Israel president in recent memory who moved the embassy, U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem and stood up to the anti-Semites around the globe than Donald Trump? But that's what they're saying, to send them back. Well, that's going to end up being used against Jews because of Donald Trump.
Well, look, I think that this whole argument about sending them back, and it doesn't matter if they were born in the United States, they're basically, they come from immigrant families, and you know, most of the Jews in the United States also come from immigrant families, so that's why they make that comparison. But it's a ridiculous comparison, because the Jews who came to America, mostly in the early 20th century, came and they worked hard, and they got, despite persecution, despite poverty, they didn't call for days of rage. They worked hard in order to get ahead, and they were totally loyal to the United States of America. They only wanted to be good American citizens. Unlike that, some of these radical Muslim immigrants have not been of that nature. They come in and they criticize the United States, and they refer to the United States as this evil empire, and that, you know, that's basically what Tlaib and Omar have been saying. And Ocasio-Cortez is another story. We could speak about her ignorance on another day. But this is what they're preaching. And it's a problem, and Trump is right. It is a problem when immigrants come to a country and they don't show appreciation for all the good that the country gives them.
No, the ungrateful squad. David, thank you so much for your voice. For your book, Trump and the Jews, and being bold and brave, because now is the time to take the masks off of those who claim they speak for the abused and disaffected when they're really speaking for more government control and, diminution of our personal freedom and even our religious freedom. So, David, thank you so much. Let's go to Frank in Washington. Frank, welcome to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Oh, thank you, Laura. I totally agree with President Trump when he says, you know, if you're not satisfied with what's going on in America, you know, there's other places in the world where you can go live. I just think that the Democrats are using racism and sexism and every bad ism you can think of because they have no agenda. They have no ideas. They are trying to create some scary boogeyman to scare people away from, you know, supporting President Trump. It's ridiculous. I think most Americans realize that, and it's not going to work.
Do you think it breeds more resentment and division?
I think it totally does, because, like I said, I'm willing to listen to a Democrat if they had any ideas. I'm not opposed to hearing a Democrat, you know, come up with some kind of an idea that's going to help the average American, but they don't. All they want to do is bash Trump, and they have no ideas to further the American people. So, yeah, I think it's divisive.
All right, I appreciate it. Let's go to Gene in my home state of Connecticut. Gene.
Laura, hey, yeah, your home blue state of Connecticut.
What's happened to the nutmeg state?
Anti-Americanism or racist at all. We're talking about reality. The man's not lying here. If he wasn't telling the truth about any one of these individuals, then you know, you're making up a story. But calling out what's real in this country is not racist, in my opinion. And you know, my parents came to this country. My mother came through Ellis Island. My dad is 105 years old. He's a
wow.
World War II combat infantry officer. The flag flies in front of my house, and they built this country. And now we got four individuals that are like first graders walking into a university, telling the university president the school's terrible.
I've never seen anything like it, really. I mean, it's they are the grievance generation. And remember, this is what we get. This kind of thinking is what we get when we allowed our public schools to be turned into little indoctrination centers, too. When we allowed this anti-American strain of thought into our schools and we popularized it in the media. That's also a problem. I appreciate it. Joining us now is a woman who hopes to unseat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and send her maybe off to, I don't know, she could do a reality show. She could maybe start a interesting business on Instagram since she has such a following.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border, and that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps. And if that doesn't bother you, whatever. I want to talk to the people that are concerned enough with humanity to say that we should not, that never again means something.
America has always been about the triumph of people who fight for everyone versus those who want to preserve rights for just a select few. There is no bottom to the barrel of vitriol that will be used and weaponized to stifle those who want to advance rights for all people in the United States.
It sounds so noble coming from AOC. She's working and fighting for all people. Well, except members of her, well, people calling them the Four Stooges. I actually take them seriously. I take them at their word, and then I examine their words for true meaning. But it's a noble calling, the way she describes it. We're fighting for everyone. What most, I think, people are taking away from their perpetual grievance tour. It's like, you know how all the summer tours, the rock and roll and the pop tours have a name? This is the grievance tour. So the summer grievance tour, it's getting tiresome for people. This is literally the best economy of my lifetime. You can't, I mean, if you think it's going to get much better than this, I think you might be disappointed. Because for years we've had flatlining income and consumer confidence was stagnant or low, or we didn't have manufacturing jobs coming back to the United States. China was on the rise. We were barely able to catch up. And now that's beginning to turn around, all because of Trump's policies. But they have to keep the grievance machine humming. Otherwise, what are people going to do? Just be happy. It's almost like they hate when people are happy. When the middle class is happy and doing better, Generation G for grievance, they're really upset. I've never seen anything like it. And I've said this and I'm going to say it again. The left is never happiest as when middle class, working class Americans are unhappy. Why is that? Because then they can say, well, see, the government has to come in and help. The government has to do it. We're going to start a revolution against the government. And now people are doing better and they're miserable. Joining us now is someone who hopes to end this madness. Cherie Murray is the latest GOP challenger to AOC and hopes to unseat her in the very liberal borough of Queens in Manhattan. She's a Republican and Jamaican and an American who's proud of this country and appreciates the economic growth very much that the president's policies have helped create. She joins us now. Cherie, it's great to talk to you. How are you?
I am wonderful, Laura. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Tell us what compelled you to throw your hat in the ring here for 2020 and this, what's going to obviously be just a hot election cycle.
Yes, Laura. I mean, there's so many reasons, right? So the left hate for Trump is certainly blinding their love for America. And as we look at the district that I'm running for in Queens and the Bronx, there are issues there that aren't being addressed. Our representative launched the job-killing Green New Deal, which is going to hurt the bottom line, the pocketbooks of the constituents in the district. Then she went on to promote the Amazon job-killing deal, and she touted that as a win, with New York losing some 25,000 jobs. So the national limelight is what I see the representative focused on, and I'd like to challenge her to have some representation that focuses on the constituents' issues of the district.
Well, she seems very focused, in my view, on raising her name ID and becoming a force in public relations, and people just understand who she is. Her brand. Well, we'll edit this, so I'll just say this better. It seems to me that AOC plus three, as I call them, they're not so much concerned with whether the Democrat Party does well or, yeah, even if Trump wins, I think they're more concerned about their own name ID. So if they're really well known and their profile is raised, they're going to be happy. That's my sense. And it just doesn't seem connected to real world problems that people have in her district. To me, that's kind of secondary. At least that's my perspective.
That's right. I mean, I think everyone's seeing it, everyday New Yorkers. My campaign is about building these bridges and uniting the fight in Washington, D.C. And what we see from AOC plus three, they're burning down bridges. And you can't really do that if you plan on being successful as a legislator in Congress. I think it's disgusting, the rhetoric that we're seeing on the national level, and we do need to take the issues back to the local ones that are important. So immigration, comprehensive immigration reform is an issue that she needs to talk about. We need to start to have this conversation. You know, recently the humanitarian aid package that was presented on the House floor, voted against by AOC plus three. And, you know, if you listen to their national rhetoric, it seems like they're championing the causes for immigration, but when it comes down to actual policy, they're voting against it. So I'm a little confused on those actions, and that action actually hurt the much-needed relief that we could have sent to the border.
And Sherry, what about your boroughs and Queens and the Bronx, your district, and the fact that it's overwhelmingly Democrat? How do you cut through as a Republican with the heat and the publicity that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez receives from the mainstream media?
Listen, Laura, I have a record of accomplishments. I've been duly elected to the Republican State Committee, where I served 3 terms as a community leader. For over a decade, I've been actively involved in hosting community events. I've worked across the aisle with my Democratic counterparts. My platform message is on purpose. I have strong relationships with legislators on both sides of the aisle, and should I be elected in the 14th Congressional District, I'll bring that relationship with me to Washington, D.C. to get things done.
Well, I think that it would be so wonderful to see you in town hall settings with African-American, constituents, people from all backgrounds. So again, the question for this election, whether you're running for Congress or the Senate or the presidency, is are you ready to give back all of these economic gains and enter a period of economic downturn and fewer economic opportunities because others want to lecture you, run your life for you, make your choices, and tell you that somebody else is a racist? That's the question for America. Do you want to keep this economic miracle going for you and your family? Forget about Trump's tweets and you don't like the tweets. That doesn't affect your life at all. And I think that's the question you have to ask your constituents, Sherry, as you run and try to get this nomination for the Republicans.
No, you're right, Laura. I mean, the economy is booming. The stock market is booming. We have the lowest unemployment record. The president put out positions when he was on the campaign trail, and he is delivering on that. Look at his tax bill. It's garnered much-needed incentives, including the Opportunity Zone that New York has yet to take advantage of. I mean, the president has passed criminal justice reform. He's doing what he said he was going to do. And I just think that it's time for us to have real substantive conversations on the successes of the president instead of trying to tear him down every chance we get.
And I will tell you what she's going to do. She'll never debate you, by the way. I mean, if you're the nominee, maybe she'll do one debate with you, maybe. But she'll try to avoid any debate. But what she's going to say, and what you need to take a lesson on how the president wins, what she's going to say is, well, okay, so anyone who doesn't condemn Donald Trump, anyone who doesn't condemn him is complicit in his racist rhetoric. Okay, and you could say, I would go right back
slavery,
at her and
Laura.
Say, all right, I don't know if you've seen me lately, but don't pull that nonsense on me. You've robbed this district of opportunities. You want the people of this district and these boroughs to be dependent on the federal government and your decision making. And people want to make their own choices for their own families and have more money in their pockets. You want to pick their pockets and send the money over to your, quote, approved friends. That's not how America works. I think if you make this as a litmus test between loving this country and loving this economic growth for all people of all backgrounds and the stultifying crush of government regulations and the heavy hand of government by AOC, I think you can win this thing. I know people are going to think I'm crazy. I think she's so unpopular that you can win this thing, Sherry. But you got to be bold, and you can't play on their chessboard. You got to play your own game.
That's what we're doing, and that's why we've garnered over 100,000 followers after our launch. That's why we picked up some 10,000 followers both on Twitter, on Facebook and on Instagram. And we're getting those small dollar donations, and they're coming in, and they're just coming in. So I just want to say thank you to everybody out there who is supporting our campaign, just helping us to get that message out. We know that we have a fight against us. But we are going to take those advice that you just gave us, Laura, just focus on the economy and the disdain, the narrative of disdain that AOC plus three has been spewing on the national level has certainly brought the attention to what their hate for the president is blinding their love for this country.
Oh, so love promote, it. Music to this. I'm telling promote. You, Sheree, music to my ears. You are the perfect spokesperson for economic growth and opportunity and love of this country. And I just think this couldn't come at a better time. I'm so proud of you for, I don't know if you know you, but I hope I get to meet you someday. But I'm just so proud of you that you've decided you're going to stand up and try to make a difference. And a lot of people say it's against all odds. I don't buy that. Will you keep in touch with us and let us know how it's going along the way?
Laura, I would love to come back, and I'd absolutely love to be on your show.
Okay, fantastic. We'll have you on TV, obviously, as this thing begins to heat up. Just thrilled. And remember, we're going to bring you the stories that you're not hearing anywhere else. Sheree Murray, New York businesswoman, a Republican state party official, challenging AOC in the big 2020 race. It's going to be exciting. If you're listening to the Laura Ingraham podcast, thanks again to all of our fabulous sponsors, including the great Home Title Lock, Pluto TV, and Sheiks. Remember, America now and forever. We'll see you next time.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available at PodcastOne.com and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.